Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about the health benefits of vinegar. Then, the sudden decline in testosterone may cause Parkinson's disease symptoms in men. Also, major drug research company faked thousands of documents to get drug approved with the FDA, and nothing happened. Antidepressant use is increasing, not good, but there's no psychiatric diagnosis, even worse. And a lot more on health and healing. Then we're going to have a look at some of the latest science on what's in the vaccines that you weren't told from medical doctor Dr. Gary Coles. Also from some toxicologists in a peer-reviewed journal at a major university, they're saying, quote, no adequate studies have been conducted to assess the safety of simultaneous administration of different vaccines to young children, nor has there been any toxicological evaluation about concomitant administration of aluminum with other known toxic compounds which are routine constituents of commercial vaccine preparations, including formaldehyde, formalin, mercury, phenyl, sodium, borate, polysorbate 80, etc. Now, mind you, these are a group who are on a vaccine safety research group, and they're telling you this. Why isn't the CDC, the FDA, the National Institute of Health, or the World Health Organization telling us this? We'll give you the latest on that. Also, for those who believe that whatever a pharmaceutical company tells us, we should believe. After all, they sit in the most important rooms in America, the White House with the President of the United States. They wrote Obamacare, every word of it. It's their bill. It's not Obama's. They give us all the drugs. So surely these are people with the highest level of integrity. All right, well, let me reverse the equation. Let's just suppose for a moment that you were a serial criminal. Every week you were getting yourself caught for breaking the law. At what point would you no longer be welcomed anywhere because of lack of integrity, character, morals, and ethics? Today, from Philip Matera, Corporate Research Project, GlaxoSmithKline's corporate rap sheet. It's extensive. Also, if time permits today, Turning America into a Battlefield, a Blueprint for Lockdown of the Nation by Professor John Whitehead, Rutherford Institute. Also, our next to the last or last point with a Dr. Suzanne Humphreys on why she no longer recommends vaccines to anyone because her research shows that they're not safe or effective. It's just who we have a lot of things to share. Let's begin. First off, every hour of TV a day ups your child's risk of diabetes. This is from the University of Virginia. And they're saying that children who view television as little as an hour a day are significantly more likely to be overweight or obese or gain unhealthy weight over time. So that's the latest study. And it's just an hour a day. That's it. Now, I remember growing up, I never watched television. Maybe on a Saturday morning, but outside of that, we never watched it. And yet today, children live in front of television or computer screens. This was published in the journal Obesity. So get your kid away from television. Get them interacting with other children and into the real world. An apple a day brings more apples your way. This is from Cornell University. They say the following. We have all been told not to grocery shop on an empty stomach. But what other tips can help us shop and consequently eat healthier? Cornell researchers, these are PhDs, designed a study on this and found that shoppers can be primed to buy more produce when they eat a healthy item before shopping. In fact, their new research published in Psychology and Marketing found that individuals who ate an apple sample before shopping bought 25% more fruits and vegetables than those who did not eat a sample. So, now I happen to know this for a fact. I have had a health food store my entire life in New York City. In fact, the oldest health food store in all of New York was the Creative Health Foods, which tiny little hole-in-the-wall store it was when I opened it with no employees, couldn't afford any, just me. Never will forget, on those cold mornings, there was only one bus driver who was kind enough to stop so I could load up six of these big cooking pots and fill with soup, and I would then he'd let me off on 108th and Broadway and got open early, packing the bags downstairs with the dried fruits and nuts and seeds, take him upstairs, opening for breakfast for the garbage men who would pull up their trucks and come in and get breakfast, and I'd make him wash the dishes, close the store, go back downstairs, continued, come back up at 9 o'clock, open until noon, serve lunch, go back downstairs, close for 2 hours till at 2, come back upstairs, and then work until dinner, serve dinner, clean the dishes, and then lock it up and go home. That was my day. And so owning a small business and a health food store is something I know something about. So now when I see people coming in and having a juice, and hundreds upon hundreds of people are having juices every day, and they're very specific. They know what they want, and if you ask them, they'll tell you why. These tend to be extremely educated, health-minded people from all walks of life. A lot from Columbia University because it's in the neighborhood. But also, when you watch them shop around the rest of the store, what they're doing, if they're drinking juices, they tend to have more fruits and vegetables, and they tend to eat more wholesome versus someone who doesn't juice and may go to the healthy snacks, maybe the baked or raw potato chips rather than the vegetables. So I could certainly verify that this is an accurate concept. So now let's apply this to our children and our friends and family. What if when our kids got home from school or our partners got home, what if on the table we had a nice, beautiful display of fruit? First, fruit's not expensive. Secondly, it's fun if you can get to the country in season to get like a bushel, because if you buy a bushel, you can get them really inexpensive. And better still, all across America, there are pick-your-own. And these are dirt cheap, where you can go in and pick your strawberries or blueberries or peaches, and you pay very little. And then you can juice them, eat them fresh. You can wash them, cut them, and freeze them in freezer ecology green bags. You can dry them overnight at 115 degrees so they have all their nutrient intact and they'll last forever. In fact, I dry them, then I freeze them, so they'll last forever. So it's always economy of scale. And you're going to pay a lot less if you do it that way, or farmer's market. And if you go near the end of a day at a farmer's market, they don't want to truck all that stuff back to their farm because they have a whole week they have to wait, and it won't be fresh in a week. So that's when you can go in and say, look, you have, 10 boxes of strawberries. It's normally $4 a box. I'll give you $1 a box. For them, hey, that's gas money, and better than hauling it back and watching it mold. So don't be afraid to go to the farmers markets at the end with the last half hour, because that's when they're starting to, get ready. And also, they don't have air conditioning. So in the summertime, those places are hot, and they don't generally take the field heat out of what they do before they bring it, which is the best way of preserving vegetables and fruits. So like dumping it in ice water, and that's what you really should do. If you want a peach to stay longer and not mold on you, when you pick it, dump it in ice water. Just keep it in ice water for about 5 minutes. Takes the field heat out and suspends it so it doesn't get the mold and it stays fresher longer. That's also true of lettuces that keep them from wilting. In any case, just a suggestion. But then what if when people got home, there was a wonderful, already washed bowl of fresh fruit, grapes, and not berries, because you don't want to be washing, putting out your raspberries and strawberries, they'll mold. But things that don't, your pears, the Comus pears, your apples, the crisp apples, like Fuji apples, which are really crisp and delicious, and an apple called Crispy. It's very, very crispy, juicy in the inside, and you get them cold and put them out, and they're delicious. And then in your refrigerator, have some smoothies made. Now, here's the smoothies I recommend. If it's hot out, I recommend juicing grapes and then putting in ice, and or just throw grapes and ice together and with some vitamin C and put it in a blender. So you got one of those kind of like slushes, cold, delicious, thirst-quenching. Or you can take watermelon, throw it in a blender with some lemon juice. That's and cold ice, and that's another slushy. And you can put some mineral water in there, too. So it quenches your thirst. You're getting potassium and electrolytes. But it gets people in the habit of having something fresh and really tasty. And you can do the same with greens. A nice, cool green cucumber, cabbage, celery, and apple juice with lemon. That's delicious. Quenches the thirst also. And grapefruit with lemon. That quenches the thirst. So these are thirst quenchers. Now, if you're quenching the thirst this way, you're less likely to have someone reach for a cola or a non-calorie aspartame sweetened soft drink. So one way to wean people away. Now, what if you also had some healthy homemade snacks? You could have baba ganoush. You could, and if you come from the Middle East, you already know how to make it because it's a traditional. Every single family has it. Everyone knows how to make it. Very easy with eggplant. But you could also do hummus. And hummus is very easy to make also with chickpeas. Chickpeas and lemon juice and sea salt. And I like to use a little vinegar and either tupelo honey or clover honey or lime juice. And you blend that together. It's just spectacular. And then you have some rice crackers. These are baked at low temperature, so they're raw. They're tasty. They're made from black rice. And you put those around a plate. You put your hummus in the middle of the plate, or baba ganoush and hummus. And so you put it out about 15 minutes before the person's getting home. They walk in. Now they've got a healthy snack. Now, you can change this every day. You can change the beverages someone has after workout. You can change the fruit based on season and what's available and organic. So, mind you, whatever is impacting human behavior in a store, you can impact that same human behavior at home. Now you get someone used to eating healthy snacks when they get home, healthy juices after an exercise, and a healthy smoothie before they go to work. There's a higher probability that they're going to continue that trend of shopping for or wanting something healthy the rest of the day. Sure, a person might indulge themselves in something that is not to your liking, but so what? All right, that happens, get over it, and get back on track and have another good thing with a smile and encourage them. I remember being in this Italian family's home. They were extraordinarily gracious. Because we were strangers, but his father insisted that we go visit his son, who was very successful in Milan, which is it's the Wall Street of Italy. That's where all the big business and banks do their business, and the major fabrics are brought in, and the great designers do their work. So we went for what was just to have been a conversation. Next thing you know, they're inviting us. No, you must come in. You must stay here for the next 2 days. And they were extraordinarily hospitable. But because I made them my version of Italian meal, and then I went out the last day we were there, we were only there with them for 2 days. But there was a local farmer's market. So I bought cases upon cases of everything you can imagine. I had to have a car bring it back. And so when they got up that morning, they had a balcony outside, and I had the entire balcony stocked with every kind of vegetable and fruit, and just I left him a note saying, this is just to show our appreciation for your hospitality. And he called me. He said, hey. He said, thank you. He said, you know, we buy things by the case because in Italy here, you don't have a lot of stored food. So you like to buy things fresh. And you like to make enough for a couple days. So we make a sauce slow, and then we store it and have it the next couple days. And I said, yeah, that's the right way to do it. So the lesson is, in that Italian family's house, every day there's a giant bowl of mixed fruits. There's fresh grape juices that they have from different grapes that they make and press in the refrigerator. I noticed this. I said, what are these? Oh, those are grape juices. You make them yourself? Yeah, we make them ourselves. Show me this little machine. It's something like, you know, how we put an orange or grapefruit over that little spinner and it spins and out shoots a juice. They do something similar to that with a press. You put it in and then you pull down this lever and boom, it presses out the juice and you get all the benefits. And then they keep the mesh and they use that to create a fertilizer that enriches their plants. In any case, fresh fruits always on a table. Throw away all snack junk foods. No more cookies and cakes and pastries. Anything that doesn't enhance health, you don't want in your body. Now, for those of you who have Parkinson's, and by the way, I'm going to be doing something shortly. I'm starting my trip back to New York. It'll take me about a week and a half to get back there because of all things I have to do in the interim and along the way. The good news is I have three dynamite social conscious documentaries that will be completed. One is only 2 to 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks wait for 100% completion. I'll air that in June in New York and around. I'll run up to Woodstock, do a premiere up there on Long Island and in the city. And then I have one also that I'll premiere in the fall and then one next December. And all those were completed on this trip, so it's been extraordinarily fruitful. And so I'll look forward to getting back. But I came up with a whole new concept of how to deal with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, dementia, and memory loss. And I'll put it to the test when I get back, and I'll talk more about that. It just came to mind because our final study today comes from Rush University Medical Center. And it deals with the sudden decline in testosterone can cause Parkinson's disease symptoms in men. Now, this was published in the Journal of Biological Chemistry. And that's what they found, the male sex hormone, testosterone. It's a big deal. Quote, while scientists use different toxins and a number of complex genetic approaches to model Parkinson's disease in mice, we have found that the sudden drop in the level of testosterone following castration is sufficient to cause persistent Parkinson-like pathology and symptoms in male mice. In men, testosterone levels are intimately coupled to many disease processes, and typically in healthy men, testosterone levels go to the maximum in the mid-30s, which then drop about 1% per year. And however, they may dip drastically due to stress or any life event, a crisis, losing a job, getting divorced, separated out of a relationship. Anything that causes stress can cause your testosterone just to drop. With that, you lose your libido, muscle mass, you become really vulnerable to inflammation in the brain. Now, we know that one of the important chemicals in our brain is nitric oxide. It's extremely important. However, when nitric oxide is produced within the brain in excess by a protein called inducible nitric oxide synthase, neurons start dying. And this study has become more fascinating than what people thought because stress, extreme stress, causes this. So one of the things we don't want is normal free testosterone to go down, but then a person gets under stress and the nitric oxide in the brain goes up. So, on a vegan diet and taking your brain supplements, coenzyme Q10, phosphatidylserine, acetylcholine, carnitine. These help protect your brain. Vitamin C protects your brain. Vitamin E protects your brain. Tremendous amount of protection. Exercising protects your brain. And de-stressing protects your brain. All right, those are the latest on health and healing. I'll save tomorrow the benefits of vinegar because there's a whole lot of information on how it protects your heart, is anti-infective, anti-cancer, and controls blood sugar. A lot of good stuff on apple cider vinegar. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to talk with Professor Ellen Brown about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and why it's bad to the bone. And we're going to hear from Dr. Suzanne Humphreys in a moment about vaccines not being safe or effective. But I got a couple good news points. First, our grape stuff, a new product which we were out of because it went in so fast, is back in stock. Today. Not a whole lot, but we've got enough. And so all back orders are going out and new orders can be had. Also, red stuff today, back in stock. So this is the beautiful large, jar with the 10,000 protective ORAC, which is your antioxidant. It's kosher, it's gluten-free, it's vegan, and it has all the great things in there that you would expect. And it's on sale today. So it's a big savings. And so if you would like to know, all right, why should I care about this? Why should I spend any time on wanting red stuff? Well, because we don't get all of our fruits, do we? We should, we'd like to, but the reality is we don't. So I want people to be able to get their red stuff every single day in the morning, ideally. Put it in. I put it in with green stuff, greens and grains, grape stuff, muscle stuff, supremacy. I put it all together, and that way I have it. So, same way that I would like to know that everyone in this audience is getting their fruits every day and their vegetables every day, the reality is we don't. So, if we have a product that you can use that gives you the most important fruits in their best form, then why not take advantage of it? Now, I don't make claims. A lot of people say, what does it do? If I told you what many of the products I invent do, there would be an enormous rush for them. But I never do. I simply leave it to your intelligence to know that if I created a product, and I'm known for creating the finest products in the world, I don't market them, but I do create them, and they're vegan, and they're gluten-free, and they have the high ORAC, O-R-A-C, which is a measure of the antioxidant capacity for them to trap free radicals in your body, and they're raw and all natural, they're fruits with enzymes, and then the superstars. There's a reason why I choose a proprietary blend of cherries, strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, apples, grapes, bananas, pomegranate, prunes, acerola, goji, cranberries, acai, bilberries, watermelon, papaya, grapeseed extract, and pomegranate extract. That's it. There's nothing else in there. Only has 64 calories, so it's low glycemic. It is terrific. And the sugars are in there, the natural sugars, small tiny amount, from the fruit itself. And it tastes good. taste delicious. So this is derived from fresh fruits and whole foods. This is not a supplement. This is a whole food. It comes in a jar. It's called Red Stuff. We've been out of it now for some time because I make these in small batches, and sometimes it's a challenge to get all the ingredients together. And I don't compromise on this. So we just got 1,000 bottles in. That's it. That'll go in about a week. So you can call today and get your Red Stuff back in stock, all right, today. On sale. Grape Stuff is back. Red Stuff is back. And hopefully this week we'll have everything else that's out of stock, like Spermacy 24-ounce back. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Also, you can drop by the health food store at 89th and Broadway and say hello to Neil, and you can pick it up there in person if you want to get it immediately, 89th and Broadway. So call 877-627-5065 if that line should be busy and you can't get through immediately. Be patient, call back, or you can call a different number. You can call 1-800-240-1494. 1-800-240-1494. Now, let's go over and hear what Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, medical doctor, an Orthodox medical doctor, who started to look at why her patients on dialysis were dying when they got a vaccine. This is the last part of her series.
There's absolutely no doubt that vaccines are big business. This man that I mentioned earlier, Gregory Poland, is one of the most widely quoted pro-vaccine researchers. He's a professor of medicine and researcher and a motivational speaker at Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. He's also editor-in-chief of Vaccine Medical Journal. He's a man who knows a lot more about vaccines than he lets on. But what's most important to him is maximum use of current vaccines. Until his research gets to the stage where his vaccine patents will come into force. Poland calls this a new golden era of personalized predictive vaccinology, where we abandon the one-size-fits-all approach. However, another new era of vaccine development was predicted a long time ago. The first mention of vaccine riches, ironically, came from the pen of the World Health Organization in a 1998 newsletter that startled me in its outright admissions. It said that new microbes inflict new syndromes in different populations. And while it is bad for those people, it's good news for the global program for vaccines and immunization employees. And that business is good and that their jobs will not likely disappear. Did you know that the World Health Organization is a business? Add to that the more recent published medical journal literature in Lancet and elsewhere showing that the World Health Organization does not often base its recommendations on evidence and that there are huge conflicts of interest between their consultants and drug companies. For me, medicine was once a business too, and it was very good and lots of fun to have all that money in the years that I did. But the love of money can rip away at honesty, decency, and indeed life itself. In 1998, the World Health Organization published an update of their 1993 Children's Vaccine Initiative Plan. Here are some targets outlined in the book. Does this look to you like the mandates from an independent organization or a promoter of a business? Some people might say, well, so what? It's smart to have a business plan. But it's not what's in this book that's the main problem. The main problem is what's left out of this book. Where are the voices of the consumers whose kids became another statistic? Or those who want facts to make a decision? The World Health Organization still isn't on top of the expanded program on immunization's unsafe syringe issues. For years, used vaccine syringes have mysteriously spread through the African black market. Other World Health Organization documents regarding unsafe injections state that these black market syringes have been responsible for widespread hepatitis B and HIV infections in undeveloped countries. Yet the World Health Organization commit to twisting politicians' arms, parents' arms, co-opting mothers to advertise, and creating a climate of maximum vaccine acceptance and use, which by default makes criminals of all those who don't want to vaccinate their children. Today, in 2015, this looks like it's already happened. In 2015, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services pretty much took the 1997 World Health Organization book and mirrored that for adults. This is a plan that has been a long time in the making, and we're just getting to see the real nuts and bolts. Notice the goals here, also described as targets in the document. Today's climate is all about creating a culture of compliance. Anything outside that mandate isn't on the table for discussion. So what then happens to dissenters, public or medical? Doctors are humiliated, alienated, attacked, and called dangerous, incompetent quacks simply for criticizing mandatory vaccination, even when, like me, they were highly respected in their careers in conventional medicine. Doctors who see things that make them lose sleep rarely risk everything and speak. Some, like recent CDC whistleblower Dr. William Thompson, after decades of compliance with CDC insider policy, do speak. When Paul Offit was asked what he thought of this highly published veteran CDC scientist coming forward, his response was that Dr. Thompson must have psychological problems. Apparently, anyone who states anything potentially damning about vaccines, whether well-founded or not, is crazy, fraudulent, or a quack. Whether or not they are neurosurgeons, radiologists, Rockefeller-trained immunologists, Harvard vaccinologists, or pediatricians with decades of experience. But you can see that it has long been government policy to stamp out any doubt about vaccine programs, whether well-founded or not. It was interesting that the CDC gave Dr. Thompson an award after he spoke out, and that he felt the need to say he was now focused on his job and family. It remains to be seen what, if anything, Dr. Thompson will do next, and whether the CDC is trying to buy his silence. That's how it works. They also tried to stop Dr. Bernice Eddy talking about SV40 by offering her a deal they thought she would not refuse, but that didn't work. Their actions against Dr. Morris backfired because his morals would not tolerate open fraud, and neither would he be silenced. Doctors like me were never taught that decades of testing, which showed the flu vaccine was rubbish, never saw the light of day. Today, the Cochrane writings on the ineffectiveness of the flu vaccine and Dr. Tom Jefferson's view that the flu vaccine is given as policy, not for scientific reasons, is little known. The information in Sir Graham Wilson's book never made it to medical libraries or medical doctors' consciousness. Not too many people realize that at its core, the World Health Organization is a business. Most doctors wouldn't see a vaccine reaction if it bit them in the nose. And if they see one, most just stick their heads in the sand. This is why families in America get such a rough deal and why there are so many sick kids. I am only one of 7,000 plus nephrologists in the United States. I don't believe I'm the only person who has seen numerous patients suffer after vaccines. I think I'm just one doctor who listened to what patients were saying and did my own in-depth research. Speaking out as a doctor today means you risk your medical license, your income, and your reputation. So it's logical that most doctors will not touch the issue of vaccination, even if they do see something wrong. If Dr. Eddy was shut down even when her published work showed that injecting polio vaccines into hamsters caused tumors from polyomaviruses, and polio vaccines into monkeys caused paralysis because the vaccine virus that was supposed to be dead was still alive, and if Dr. Morris, with all the evidence he had, was treated the way he was, who in my hospital administration would care what a clinical nephrologist has to say? The bottom line is that clinicians should never be responsible for proving either drug or vaccine safety, as I was asked to do. A clinician's job is their patients. I didn't want to do a study to prove what I saw with my own eyes under the stressful, oppressive conditions I was surrounded with. My time is now better spent voicing scientifically valid concerns regarding vaccine safety. The question is, what will it take for scientific integrity to become valued in medicine? When will medical doctors realize that they're mostly just high-paid, drug-dispensing technicians for a dangerous religion that depends on everyone being ignorant about information relevant to vaccines? As a nephrologist, I was belittled for daring to join a few dots for the benefit of my patients and had to go searching for this kind of information. Back in 2009, I didn't understand why the hospital administration was battling me when all I asked was to defer vaccination until the day of discharge. It wasn't until this year when a nurse in high-level administration told me the hospitals are not reimbursed for the entire admission if patients are not vaccinated in the first 24 hours or if there is not a detailed explanation as to why they were not vaccinated. When parents call me today and tell me they were treated harshly and thrown out of their doctor's office for refusing to allow up to 8 vaccines and numerous injections into their infants in one day, I usually ask them why they even go there in the first place. Why expose children to stress, to disease in the office, to medicine by numbers, algorithms, to one-size-fits-all protocols delivered with a haughty disdain for choice?
And that's Dr. Susanna Humphreys. We're going to take a break and come back and speak with Professor Ellen Brown about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Please stay with us. People listening throughout the world, we welcome you. On the phone now from Los Angeles is Ellen Brown. She's an economist and attorney in Los Angeles who's now the founder of the Public Banking Institute, which is a nonprofit economic group to find viable, sustainable solutions to America's banking crisis by promoting people-owned state and community banks. Last year, she ran as the Green Party candidate for California State Treasurer. She's written extensively about private financial cartels and the Federal Reserve. Her recent book is The Public Bank Solution, From Austerity to Prosperity, which introduces a safe, soluble public banking alternative to the credit-based system of the current big banks. Her writings appear on the Center for Global Research, where she's a research associate. She's also the host of a radio program on Monday, or it's called It's Our Monday, heard every Wednesday at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Her website is webofdebt.com. Nice to have you with us today, Ellen.
Thanks, Gary. Nice to talk to you.
Right now, we're looking at the Senate Finance Committee's approval of the bill to fast-track the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and it could go to the full Senate next week. Now, fast-tracking means that Congress will be prohibited from amending the trade deal. The negotiations remain secret. There has been no accounting to all the individuals who have been a part of it. We have only gotten glimpses of it through WikiLeaks when they sent some of it, and what we saw was terrifying because I'm very concerned that the President of the United States, his trade advisors, and the 200 to 600 special consultants that are brought in on a regular basis representing their industries and their corporations, there's no one representing the American people. None. Zero. And we're kept in the silence about this. We're not supposed to speak up. We're supposed to trust the president. And I'm very concerned about what could happen if this becomes law, because then it will usurp our law, all of our laws in the United States, as this would be considered sovereign over those. Take us through what you're concerned about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and what's in it that we're not told about, how it might impact us.
Well, I just read an article about that, and my focus in the article was on the investor-state dispute settlement provision in the it's in other trade agreements. It's typically in trade agreements, going back all the way back to 1959, but they've made it even more widespread. So what the investor-state dispute settlement thing says is that if a company, let's say Monsanto or some large company, loses profits due to some legislation that a state or a country has passed, then they can sue the state for their lost profits. It used to be, when they first started having those provisions, it would be like, say you had a factory in some Latin American country and they decided to nationalize that industry and took your factory. Well, it would make some sense. You know, you had built the factory, you'd put your resources into it, and so it's only fair that the company should get compensated for that improvement that they had made to the country. But now they're talking about not just the capital improvements that you've made in that country, but the money that you expected to make from your investment, and it includes financial, like banks that might lose money, or other hedge funds or whatever that might lose money because of some new legislation that's passed in the country. So that would include environmental legislation, health legislation, and all those things that governments do to protect their people. So all those things could become so expensive that they won't pass any new laws, because the opposition will, of course, say this could mean a huge liability down the road, and we don't know what the liability is, and we don't have the money for it, so we can't pass this legislation. So they've basically taken over government. It's now government by big multinational corporations, and that's obviously the intent. That's the intent of the TPP, and it's not only got those provisions about investor-state resolution, but it has specific provisions against certain types of legislation. For instance, you can't really do much. You can't prevent Monsanto from coming in and using their GMO seeds, or you can't prevent banks from speculating in derivatives or gambling with their depositors' money, et cetera. And you can't pass laws like laws that would maybe tax investments or different things that would hurt profits as we now know them. And who determines how much profit has been lost? The company itself, because who else knows how much profit they were going to make? So anyway, it's all very shady and all very against the people and against the government, that assuming government's attempted to the extent the governments are there to protect the interests of the people, it certainly is against all that.
It would also mean that any product like shrimp now is most of it is grown in Thailand or China under very unsanitary conditions, and now there will be no country of origin. You will not know where anything is made, so that protects them if they're doing an unhealthy product. Also, they determine the health of the product, not our state agencies. So if a state agency in California found that a pesticide was being brought in from, let's say, from Germany, and it was similar to DDT, and we didn't want it, they could sue us and say, well, okay, now you have to pay us for all our lost resources. Or they could start using chemicals in their mining operations that are kept secret, and we would not know what were in them. In fact, they would have more power over us when this passes than at any point in our country's history since we developed independence from Great Britain, and the unions. And by the way, I got to tell you, you talk about being complicit. I think that union members should take an honest, careful look at the hierarchy and how they have misaligned with the Democrats, because these Democrats have sold them out repeatedly. Now, these are not stupid people. The heads of these unions know full well that the Trans-Pacific Partnership will virtually be the death knell of all unions in the United States. And yet, instead of asking for a general strike, which would show what John L. Lewis or some of the other earlier George Meany, some of the other titans of the union movement would have done, it's, well, we're hopeful that they will, you know, understand that we're not going to guarantee them that we could vote for them in the future. What kind of mamsy-pamsy, wishy-washy statement is that from the head of the AFL-CIO? No, it's, you know, the unfortunately there has been this complicit malignancy, complicit in how it's been caused, but saying that it's benign, it's not. Where if you wanted to buy the vote on the left, you align the unions. If you want to buy a vote on the right, you align the industrialists or the bankers. Both have responsibility in this matter. And it's the Democrats are going to vote for this just like the Republicans. It's going to be bipartisan. Now, I'm not even talking about the bill itself, the law, because no one will know what's in it until they read it. And then everyone will wring their hands and say, oh, we didn't read it. We should have. But it was secret. We couldn't. We were forbidden from looking at it. Well, why were you elected? Would you have said when you were campaigning, I will absolutely not betray any confidence if I'm told not to by corporate America on your behalf? No, you say, I'm going to go in there and find out the truth and tell the truth. So we have an entire political class, with only a few exceptions, that are saying, we don't want anything to do with this at all. So now they're going to say, well, what if we modify a piece of it here and there? And that's the back-end game they're going to do. They're going to say, well, it's not a perfect law, but it's better than anything else. No, it's not. That was the lies that the Clinton White House said about NAFTA and then the creation of the World Trade Organization. Shouldn't we expect more from our legislators? Because now it's a routine. Put money in their bank accounts and they give you their vote. Then they go before the public and say, well, to our best judgment, this is the best we can do. No, we don't want this law at all. And I'm very disappointed that the head of the unions have not asked for a general strike to close down the country to show, you go ahead with this, we're going to close down the country. And we're going to not vote for any of you. We'll vote independent in the next election. Until they have the courage to do that, they're complicit in this, right up to their eyeballs. Your thoughts, please.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's being sold. Well, the American people haven't heard these wrinkles, the thing, what's wrong with it. Of course, they only read what is published in the major media or what's on TV. And as we know, all the major media are owned by big corporate interests. So, of course, they don't hear the other side of it. Fortunately, there is the internet. So if people look, they can find it on the internet, but the internet's not something that blasts you like the TV does every time you turn it on with what the latest, the top of the news is. So the American people aren't getting the straight story. It's being sold as something that's good for us because our industries will be able to sell more abroad. But
Ellen, you know that's a lie. It's not true.
Yeah.
It's a lie. Why is it a lie? Because our currency is overvalued against other currencies. We have a $500 billion this year trade deficit. So even if we still have any companies left in America who can manufacture anything, and that's shrinking, the cost of sending those overseas means that this will automatically create between a 20 to 30% tariff fee for them, meaning if you buy one of our television sets or our refrigerators, you're going to pay more than the same identical television or refrigerator made in China with slave labor or some other country. Why can't we be honest about the economics of this?
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. It's shocking what's in it. And I saw Bernie Sanders was saying that they do allow the legislators to see it, but they can't take their staff in with them. They can't take a typewriter or a notepad even. They have to memorize and they have to know exactly what section they want to look at. And it's got all these deletions through it, so it's very hard to read. So you have these bills that are extremely long and complicated. You only have a very short time to look at it, and then it's an up or down vote, and it's they don't give time to publicize it so everybody can look into it. I mean, why? Why all the secrecy? They know that if it were in full view for everyone to think about over a long period, that it would be defeated. Just the way it's set up, it's clear that there's something wrong with it, but it's liable to go through anyway just because big money owns Congress.
Do you believe that the American public is so indifferent at this point on anything that's important that they would care less what's in it?
Well, I think they wouldn't be indifferent if they knew, and that's the reason you have your radio show and I have, you know, I write and write and write because we hope to alert them. And in fact, it seems to me, looking on the bright side, maybe arguably, the reason that we see these onerous things coming down the pike is that they're pulling out all the stops because they know that people are becoming more enlightened. It's becoming more and more difficult to pull something on people because we have access to information that we never had before. I know somebody... Go ahead.
Ellen, focus on this for a moment. I believe it's just the opposite, and see if you can appreciate this perspective. I believe that enlightened people are now better informed, and therefore they're more likely to speak out and to act on it. I believe the average person, by intentional neglect, chooses not to be enlightened, hence they do not have to do anything other than react.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that because of the major media and the fact that the average person is kept so busy and they feel powerless. What can they do about it? Why depress yourself by learning all these issues? I mean, you work all day, you come home tired, then you've got to do the laundry and deal with the kids, or, you know, if you're a woman. And who has time to get into these issues? You and I do because that's what we do, and that's why we do it, to hopefully enlighten other people. But, I mean, even my own relatives who are intelligent, I mean, like my brother, for example, they feel like, well, I don't really understand it, and what can I do about it? And it's not all that interesting. They'd have little time for the TV anyway. They'd rather watch a sitcom and put themselves to sleep with it.
Well, sooner rather than later, this will pass. Then the consequences. Then watch all.
I think it may not pass because there is a lot of opposition. And the longer we can put them off, the more it becomes an issue in the election, and, you know, rather than getting it over real quick with fast track. If we can avoid having it go through with fast track, then I think it would probably fail.
Well, I hope so, but we have to voice our concern.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Let your legislator know the word is no for the fast tracking of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Thank you very much, Ellen.
Okay,
Brown.
Thank you, and good talking to you.
And that was Professor Ellen Brown. Now, we're going to close out today by sharing a little different insight. And I'd like for you to think about this, because all the time I'm asked, what's going on out there? And you want to look at the facts, and then you want to compare that to our perception of what is happening. I believe, along with John Whitehead in the Rufford Institute, that America is becoming a battlefield. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. Now, here's what Dwight Eisenhower said in 1961, quote, "The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together." Okay, a standing army, something that propelled the early colonists into revolution, strips the American people of any vestige of freedom. How can there be any semblance of freedom when there are tanks in the street, military encampments in the cities, Black Hawk helicopters and armed drones patrolling overhead. According to John Whitehead, it was for this reason that those who established America's vestige control of the military in a civilian government with a civilian commander-in-chief. They didn't want a military government ruled by force. Rather, they opted for a republic, which is bound by the law, the Constitution. Well, so much for our Constitution today. What happened to our First Amendment rights? What happened to our Fifth Amendment, our Fourth Amendment, our 14th Amendment? These amendments are being eviscerated. And unfortunately, with the Constitution under constant attack, the military's power and influence and authority have grown dramatically. Even the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878, which makes it a crime for the government to use the military to carry out arrests, searches, seizures of evidence, and other activities normally handled by civilian police forces, has been weakened by both Barack Obama and George Bush, who ushered in exemptions allowing troops to deploy domestically and arrest civilians in the wake of alleged terrorist acts. Now we find ourselves struggling to retain some semblance of freedom in the face of police and law enforcement agencies that look and act, from my perspective, an awful lot like the military, and they have just as little regard for the Fourth Amendment, laws such as the National Defense Authorization Act and the Patriot Act that allow the military to arrest and indefinitely detain American civilians, and military drills that acclimate the American public to the sight of armed tanks in the streets and military encampments in cities and combat aircraft patrolling overhead. Making matters worse, we find that the military plans to use southwestern states as staging grounds for guerrilla warfare drills in which highly trained military troops equipped with all manner of weapons turn American towns and cities into quasi-battlefields. Why? They tell us so the Special Operations Forces can get realistic military training in hostile territory. What? They've even got a name for this exercise, Jade Helm 15. Whether or not Americans have anything to fear from Jade Helm 15, a covert, multi-agency, multi-state, eight-week military training exercise set to take place this summer from July 15th through September 15th, remains to be seen. Now, haven't we been urged time and time again to just trust the government, to respect our rights and abide by the rule of law, only to find that every agency of government, every bureaucracy of government, every head of every agency of government, every president of the United States in recent history has lied to us? They have plundered our resources, natural and social, and they've disregarded the Constitution at every turn. So let's assume for the moment that Jade Helm 15 is not a thinly veiled military plot to put into effect, much like John Frankenheimer's 1964 political thriller, 7 Days in May, but is merely a routine exercise for troops, albeit a blatantly intimidating flexing of the military's muscles. The problem arises when you start to add Jade Helm onto the list of other troubling developments that have taken place over the last 30 years. Maybe I missed it, but haven't we had nothing but rampant surveillance, illegal surveillance? Didn't we have the corporate-funded elections and Citizens United? Didn't we have the revolving door between lobbyists and elected officials? They're virtually indistinguishable. Where someone at a big corporation like Monsanto goes and heads the FDA's food protection group and then goes back to Monsanto. We have the militarization of our police, the loss of our freedoms, the injustices of our courts, the privatization of our prisons, the school lockdowns, the roadside strip searches, the asset seizures, your $4 billion last year alone, the military drills on domestic soil, the fusion centers and the simultaneous fusing of every branch of law enforcement, federal, state, and local, the stockpiling of ammunition by various governmental agencies, the active shooter drills that are indistinguishable from actual crisis, and the economy being controlled by a relatively small group of people who are simply too big to jail and too big to fail. But we received $21 trillion, and we didn't receive a nickel to help us to stop a home foreclosure. Then, when you see all this in perspective, the overall picture seems not so benign. So I believe that we should pay some attention. I believe when the United States has 80,000 SWAT team raids, most of which is not security related, but now you have the Department of Agriculture, the Railroad Retirement Board, the Tennessee Valley Authority, the Office of Personnel Management, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the Food, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Education Department. They had 73 federal law enforcement agencies with 120,000 armed full-time on-duty officers with arrest authority. Why? Since when should you have the Office of Personnel Management have to have armed people there in the Consumer Product Protection Agency? This is insane. This goes beyond Orwell. And four-fifths of those offices are under the command of either the Department of Homeland Security or the Department of Justice. What's with all the government agencies stockpiling hollow point bullets? For example, why does the Department of Agriculture need 40 caliber semi-automatic submachine guns and 320,000 rounds of hollow point bullets? Why? You're out there looking at vegetables and fruits and grains. Now you want body armor? Why does the Postal Service need, quote, assorted small arms ammunition, 1.6 billion rounds of hollow point ammunition, 7,000 fully automatic 5.56 times 44 NATO personal defense weapons, plus a huge staff of 30-round high-capacity magazines? Why? The FBI, in addition, requests 100 million hollow point rounds. The Department of Education, the IRS, the Social Security Administration, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which oversees our National Weather Service, also among the federal agencies that have taken to purchasing ammunition and bulk weaponry. Why? We're never told the truth about anything, ever, in our country. I don't think it's possible to get an honest answer out of anyone in a position of power. So clearly there are agendas afoot that they assume we will simply accept. And I believe that we'd better be paying attention, because otherwise this could be 1930s Germany all over again. Those are my thoughts. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day. You may be wrong, but still I'm crazy about you.